just recently wrapped up our series on wisdom. And we talked 5 weeks about going through the book of Proverbs and what it looks like to wisdom. You can find all those series, all those messages on at cloquetvineyard.org. And we're starting our new one, and it's called Take Heart, about experiencing love in like difficult seasons. Because this funny thing happens to me every February. I get to February, and I'm always surprised. And I'll come home. And you need to know this. I'm an eternal optimist. Everything's like at an all-time high. If there's like a 10, I'm like at a 12 most of the time, right? And even at the Spur Station, Esco, it was on Monday, and I went and got gas, and Lee's like, hey, are you ready to start another work week? And I'm like, yes, I am. I love my job. And like, everything is awesome, is the song runs in my head all the time. So when I feel something heavy, when I feel something that just feels a little raw, things that usually bounce off me in February stick a little bit longer. When I'm trying to connect and help families or help people, it just sits on me a little bit heavier. Things that usually don't wake me up at night wake me up. The things that make me feel just a little bit down feel a lot heavier. You been there before? And like I'll come home after work, and I'm like, oh man, this is really hard, and I don't know why I'm feeling this way. And Nikki, we've been married for 13 years, will say, Chris, it's February. Like she's reminding me of like, do you know what time it is? And I'm like, oh yeah, in this season in February, it's just difficult for me for some reason. And I feel guilt and shame because I feel bad. You've been there before? Because you have a feeling and you're like, I shouldn't feel that way. I should feel like I should be at a 12, right? And just because I sometimes feel like I'm like at maybe an 8. Like the world is spinning out of control because I'm at an 8. But that's how I feel. And I carry guilt and I carry shame because I don't feel super excited or because I don't feel like maybe I'm quote unquote thriving. See, there's seasons. This is something that I've just learned. Well, my wife has helped me learn, all right? Of reminding me of saying this is just normal. And maybe you're in a season. Maybe you're in a season similar where you only see the sun, what, 7 days out of the year, right? And those 7 days are amazing. And maybe that takes an effect on you. Maybe you're in a season of having young kids. Maybe you're in a season of you can't have kids. Maybe you're in a season of your kids have moved on, graduated, and now they're having kids. Maybe you're in a season of you're single. Maybe you're in a season of you're trying to pay off debt. And you're like, we are going to be wise with our money. That's a great season. That's a hard season, right? Maybe you're in a season of changing some habits. Whatever season you're in, maybe you're in a season where your mental illness is really just really hard right now. You might be lonely. You might feel distant from God. You might feel like really absolutely dry. You might be in a season of pain. You might be in a season where you're thriving. See, in those seasons, we can really respond in a couple different ways. We can respond that we just try harder. We can respond with like saying, it just is what it is. You know, you can respond with pretending that it doesn't really exist. But what if we could respond in a way of saying, what if my feelings aren't a threat? What if the things I'm walking through doesn't mean it's the end of the world? Because we fall into this trap. We fall in this trap as followers of Jesus. Easily as followers of Jesus, we buy into this, like, if I do good things, I will receive good things. Right? Like, I remember when I was beginning to follow Jesus and like in my teens and my early 20s, I would look at people who are older than me and it's like, oh, the older you get, like your spirituality just only increases. Like your spiritual maturity, your emotional maturity, right? Jim's in the back laughing right now, right? Jim's going like, it goes this way, right? I just assume the longer you're in the game, the better it gets. We actually have, we even have this little graph I made, right? And it's easy to fall into this trap of saying, okay, that means just the more good stuff I do, the more good things I receive. So like I have this checklist of I don't kill people, all right? I show up to church, I don't steal, I don't covet. I don't know what that means, but I know I'm not doing it, right? And in your mind, you might not verbalize it, in your mind, you kind of think like, no, I'm playing the game right. I'm doing all the right things. And then when something hard comes, you hit that season where it's really, really difficult. If you believe in this, there's no room for difficult things. There's no room for pain. There's no room for like having a panic attack. Because when it happens, when you feel those hard things, you have to like dismiss it. You have to say, no, then I must be a bad person. I have to carry shame and guilt because I feel something different, or this is a difficult season, because clearly I should only get good things because I'm a good person. And that's not the gospel. Thank God that's not the gospel. Because this graph, this trap we fall into is all dependent on what? How good I am. All dependent on how good I am. And there's moments I'm a hot mess. There's moments where it is not easy. Actually, I read a book called Spiritual, Messy Spirituality, and he used this graph, and he said, real life actually goes like this, and it just goes all over the place. And he goes, all of it's beautiful. Because that's the real you, and God's a big fan of the real you. So if this is not true, and life can be messy, and there's seasons where it's hard, how do we actually experience healing? How do we actually move forward? Well, I think Jesus might have something to say about that. What if we could actually like really see Jesus? Instead of just like taking like this broad view of who Jesus is, and we're like, he's a good teacher, he's a really nice guy, man, he could rock those sandals like nobody else, right? What if we could actually like trust that he is who he says he is? Because in John 16, Jesus says this, in this world you will find trouble. In this world, you're going to experience pain. You're going to find that there's hard seasons in your life. But he says, take heart, for I have overcome the world. And I use this verse a lot for myself. I bring it up when I speak a lot, when I'm sitting down with someone else, because it is such a biblical truth that we somehow just forget. Jesus is saying, it's not all rainbows. Good and beautiful life is not one that is avoiding pain or without pain. A good and beautiful life is in the midst of a hard season. Jesus says what? Take heart. It's like, pump the brakes, buddy. Slow down. Take a deep breath in. Have confidence that what? That Jesus has overcome the world, that he has given us everything we need. Everything we need to have a good and beautiful life. In the midst of a hard season, he is readily available for us. And if we can look to Jesus in those hard times, if we can experience Jesus in those hard seasons, then we don't have to let that season dictate who we are. We don't have to let that season define who we are. Because you are so much more than just a mom of young kids. You are so much more than someone who is single. You are so much more than someone who deals with mental illness. That Jesus says that you are loved, that you are his beloved. And he is absolutely crazy about you. So when you hit those hard seasons, it doesn't mean you're losing. Some of you need to hear that. Just because you have doubts about God doesn't mean that you're some horrible person. We're going to talk about that next week. How do you, when you have doubts about who God is and how great he is, does that mean you're out of the club? God's not some tyrant saying you have to believe the party line or get out of here. Like, God has something incredibly good for us. And when you can really believe that Jesus says, take heart, for I have overcome the world, that the kingdom of God is at hand, that heaven is something within reach, then you can move anywhere you want in this world. You can go anywhere you want in this world and have confidence that you are deeply loved. And you can have confidence, even though we are a hot mess, even though you're not perfect, you can know God has something good for me. Not just when I get through this, not just when I get on the other end of the season, you're like, oh, whew, I survived. Now I get the best of God. No, he's giving you every single day. He's inviting you to be with him. How can we learn in the midst of those hard seasons? Instead of just leaning in, just struggling through it. What could, while you're going through that hard part of your marriage, what is God inviting you into to learn? As you're going through dealing with physical pain, what is he inviting you to learn? As you just started, you know, in this new dating relationship, what is he inviting you to learn? There's something beautiful in it. And today we're going to be talking about bitterness, aggression, unforgiveness, resentment, all warm, fuzzy things we love talking about, right? I bet you showed up like, I hope we talk about bitterness today because I love dealing with my bitterness. Wow, thanks, Chris. That's wonderful. But I think this is something that we need to address. I think there's seasons that we can get stuck. We can get locked up in our unforgiveness. Think about it this way. We're Minnesota nice, right? Who's Minnesota nice? Raise your hand. Right? You identify, I am Minnesota nice. See, the really Minnesota nice people wouldn't raise their hands because they're humble. They're like, no, not me. I'm so Minnesota nice, can't even identify as it. All right? Everyone else is like Wisconsin nice. We're Minnesota nice. All right, Minnesota nice, I actually really love. There's something that's in our culture where we are strong, right? Where we will serve and we'll work incredibly hard. And we will smile and pretend that we really like you, all right? But underneath that Minnesota nice, there is this undercurrent of burning hot lava of rage and resentment, all right? That we just bottle up tight. We're like, down here. And it comes up, right? It comes up at odd points, like at a four-way stop sign in Washington and 14th, right? Right? And you can see a bubble up. And it's not like you might hear things in the news of people getting out of the car and like breaking windows and slashing tires and flipping cars over, right? Nothing like that. Like what we do, you know someone's about to lose it, is when they do the pursed lips and the stare. They're like, right? That's like, whoa, slow down, right? And if it gets really out of control, like out of crazy control, you might get the hands in the air and the tilted head like, just you run away. If you see someone do that, run away. And it might be a federal offense in Cloquet if you honk your horn at someone at a four-way stop sign. Like, you just go, oh, God, make your peace with the Lord, all right? It's funny, but it's true. We carry with us this unforgiveness, this rage, this bitterness. And it's not just like from something that might have happened yesterday. It might have been something that happened 20, 30 years ago. I had a friend who was at a local restaurant just a couple years ago, and he was just there having a good time, and someone came up and tried starting a fight with him because of something that my friend's dad did like 15 years ago to, I think, his dad. And it was like that bitterness and resentment got passed on to his son, and he's like, oh, I'm going to do something for the vengeance of my father, all right? And it might be something from that your spouse did or your ex did, something that your neighbor did or your coworker did, that they went and like got that promotion and claimed your work as their own and left you high and dry. And when you see that person at the basketball game and they're laughing and they're having a good time, it just, in something inside you just starts burning, right? Or you see on Facebook that they're just like on vacation and they're smiling and you're like, I don't want you to smile anymore, right? You've been there before? See, when you're healthy, like a rational person knows, like, I don't want to feel this bitterness. I don't think anyone signed up like, I hope I deeply resent my neighbors for the next 15 years of my life. No one like, you know, dances and fist pumps to that. But it's so easy. So when we're in a healthy spot, we're rational, like, no, you know, I want to be a nice person. I want to be kind. And I'm going to trust that Jesus wants me to love my neighbors. I love myself. And when you're like in a good spot, you can think that. And then you walk through Super One and you see that person come around the aisle. And then you're just ready to push the whole thing over, like flip the car over. Like, we are going to fight right now, right? It can come on you in surprising ways. And that's not a good and beautiful life. Because that resentment, that unforgiveness, that's dictating who you are. Think about it. Have you ever walked into Walmart before looking to see if that person's car is there or not? Right? One person laughed, right? Yeah, I've been there too. Have you ever like actually thought through like, okay, what time should I go to the gym so I don't see that person? And you look at the guest list of the party you're going to and you look and say, oh, are they going to be there or not? Think about the power that person has over you. Think about that awkward conversation that you're avoiding. Think about how it takes up like energy in your brain, in your life. And we become so used to this. This is like this is like the waters that you might be swimming in. You're like, yeah, of course. Like, what would it look like to be free? What would it look like to be healthy? What would it look like to actually be able to walk with confidence through Walmart? You know, what a beautiful thing. Like, we should start chanting, freedom in Walmart, right? But Jesus, this is what Jesus is inviting us into. He speaks about unforgiveness. And the words he uses are very pointed. They're very aggressive. Because when you get stuck in the season, and some of you might be here, you carry with you the thing that that person did to your family. You carry with you that thing that that teacher said to you in junior high, and you still let it drive. You let it just burn within you, and you like feed on it. Like, why do we do that? You ever wonder that? Why do we just hold on to that hurt or that pain or that voice? Like, athletes do this all the time, right? They're like, oh, you didn't draft me, and so I'm going to play harder and make millions of dollars to prove you wrong. Like, awesome, go for it, man, right? But why? Why do we hold on to that? Because of power. It feels good. It feels familiar. And even feels right in the moment, doesn't it? I was reading this author, and he talked about how we love to like be at this feast of power, this feast of resentment, and we like feast on like all the things we're going to say to that person. We're going to lick our lips and all the ways that we'll see destruction, all the ways their lives are feeling pain and resentment. And he said, but at the last moment, you realize the thing that you're feasting is yourself. It's your skeleton on the table. Like, the more that we hold on to that pain and that anger, we let it drive us, we feel like it's like leading us to a great spot, and you have the upper hand, you have the power, Jesus says, no. Because in Matthew 18, Jesus speaks this, he addresses it, and I'd like to read it. It's 14 verses, but I think it's important for us to hear the words that Jesus speaks about. And he's inviting us how we can have a good and beautiful life, how we can take heart, how we can have a deep breath in the midst of pain, in the midst of unforgiveness. He says this, starting 21. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? I love this, because what Peter is doing, he's saying, give me where the line is of when I can start being a jerk. Right? Don't we say the same thing? Don't you go to a friend and say, hey, they did this to me, they said this to me. Is it okay that I, you know, light their car on fire? Is that socially acceptable still, all right? And it might be that aggressive, but we look for permission, right? What Jesus does, he says, well, what if you thought about it differently? He says, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. That's a lot of gold. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children, all that he had, be sold to repay the debt. That's not good, just in case you want to read between the lines, right? At this, the servant fell on his knees before him and said, be patient with me, he begged, and I'll pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. Verse 28. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. And his fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, please be patient with me, and I'll pay it all back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay back the debt. When the other servants saw what happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in, you wicked servant. Remember, this is Jesus telling a story. Jesus saying, you wicked servant, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had the mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay it back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or your sister from your heart. Tortured. Jesus says you will be locked up in jail and you'll be tortured if you do not forgive your brother or your sister from your heart. See, Jesus, there's several profound things in here, but like the one takeaway for you, I want you to walk away when it comes to this bitterness and when it comes to unforgiveness, is the whole idea from the heart. Because we can treat forgiveness as a transactional, like a transactional deal, of where, you know, Adrian, you know, made fun of my red pants and spilling coffee on me, and Adrian and I are friends, and I could say, Adrian, you really hurt my feelings, and she'd say, well, you have to get tougher, Chris, right? And it's like, yeah, I love you too, right? Then I could say, yeah, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? And we can do that because we're friends. But there comes this point. There comes this point where you just can't. Maybe you've been there before, where you just can't forgive. The idea of just saying it is not enough anymore. Jesus is saying, then forgiveness needs to come from the heart. And why the heart? Because from the heart, I just can't say like, oh, I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to try. Have you tried that before? Have you ever just tried loving someone? Like, I'm just going to convince myself that they're really not a jerk and I'm going to love them. It doesn't always work. From the heart, what Jesus is saying is it has to be something supernatural. It has to be something that God puts in us. You see, forgiveness is not so much a horizontal thing. Forgiveness starts and begins in a vertical thing between me, Jesus and I. In the same way, I just can't force God to forgive me. Like when you come into a relationship with Jesus, how does that work? Do I just check all the boxes? They say, do you have to prove a case to God? Say, God, I'm good enough. It comes of you saying, I am so in desperate need of you, Jesus. My only hope is in you. And what you did on the cross, and you living a resurrected life, I believe that you are enough for me. And I take you in. It's something you receive. See, forgiveness has to be something God puts in you. And this is not fair. It's just not fair. Because we want forgiveness to be on our terms. We want forgiveness to be something that they have to pay back, something that they have to do, which we're going to talk about a little bit. But from the heart means I have to go to God and say, God, I'm a mess. I don't want to have to love this person. They don't deserve it. Everything inside of me says, I want revenge. I want to pay back. What the king did to the servant at first of saying, hey, like, by the way, you just stole, like, some commentators say it could be up to, like, billions of dollars today. We'd say if someone stole billions of dollars from someone, they say, yeah, you should punish them. Jesus goes to an extreme case to say, even then, can you choose to love? Even when it's unfair. And the only way you can do that, it has to start with Jesus. And this changed everything for Nikki and I. Well, I'll speak for me. This changed everything for me when we experienced something that was unfair, something was horrible. We were ready just to give up on church altogether. That was like 14 years ago, 13 years ago. Well, a long time ago, right? And it brought so much pain to my family. And the idea of having to go to God and say, God, you have to put some love in for me for this person because the only thing I want is to punish him. But it got to the point where I was in prison. Anytime someone would say that person's name, I'd instantly go to that dark place and I'd begin to feast of saying, oh, I hope that it fails. I hope he experiences pain. If you only knew what I went through. What Jesus is saying, when you do that, you're being tortured. You're not free. That's not a sign of a good and beautiful life. That is not a sign of freedom. And I just want to say this again. It is mostly socially acceptable for people to do that. It sometimes is even celebrated in our culture, how angry you can get, how much bitterness you have. Jesus is saying flips it on his head. So where you have to start, where I want everyone to know, it is a supernatural thing that Jesus puts forgiveness in us. In us. There's two takeaways from verse 27 that I want to hit on that I think will help us. It'll help us be able to see of how we can actually move forward with forgiveness and how we can partner with the Holy Spirit in receiving forgiveness. The first one is pity. Verse 27, the servant's master took pity on him, canceled debt, and let him go. See, pity is not just like a, oh man, I'm really sorry. Pity isn't just this like emotion. Pity, the word is like compassion. It's literally like you taking out your heart and putting it in the other person so you can feel what they feel. So you can see like their worldview. You can have this understanding of where they're coming from. Because when you are hurt, when you are wronged, when you are taken advantage of, you usually start with, hey, you know what? I completely understand why you destroyed my reputation of my business. That is a reasonable thing, you know? No. What we do is we separate ourselves from the person who hurt us. And we totally put them in different camps. And you go like, no, I'm really right, and they're really wrong. I'm really good, and they're really evil. And you notice this, if you've done this before, when someone hurts you or wrongs you, you get locked in on all the things that they do wrong. And you're like, and you critique the way they walk. You're like, look how dumb their walk is, right? This is such a dumb walk, right? Right? It's true, right? You're locked in. You can think about, you just start, you're like, oh, because they did this, that must mean they're a horrible parent and they're a horrible person and they can't make a free throw. And you can go into all these, we get locked on this hurt because we've separated them from humanity. Miroslav Volf, who is an author and theologian, and I might have just butchered his name. I apologize in case we become best friends. He says this, "Forgiveness flounders because I exclude the enemy from the community of humans, even as I exclude myself from the community of sinners." I love that. Because when we get hurt, we get so locked in and we say, no, I am perfect. Because you know what Jesus, when he's hanging on the cross, you read in the gospel, what we want Jesus to say as he's hanging there, for him to say, Father, do not forgive anyone. Because they knew exactly what they're doing when they put these nails in my arms, right? Until it comes to us. Then all of a sudden we're like, no, Jesus, forgive me. I didn't know what I was doing. See, that vengeful spirit is saying, no, that person, they knew exactly what they're doing and they should get exactly what's coming to them. Jesus is saying, what if it's different? What if you could have pity? What if you could see that maybe you're not so different? See, the king and the servant in society, we say, well, they're very different. The king sees him begging for the life of his wife and his kids. And what if for a moment he just thought, maybe we're not all so different. I wouldn't want to lose my kids over some money, a lot of money. And he cancels the debt. He had pity. See, when you can get out of this, you feeling superior as the victim. When you can get away from you feeling like I am enlightened in the way that I am because you hurt me and I have all the power, I have all the right answers. And how dare you? When you can get just at least step back from that, where you start is you step back from saying, we're all in the same boat. Something that's helped me is one thing I heard a long time ago. I heard this one teacher say, he goes, my brother or my sister is never my enemy. Never. When I meet with couples who are going through some like hard relational things, funny, both of them say, no, I'm right. I'm rational. I'm healthy. Maybe you're there right now. Like, of course I am. That's me. You're talking about me, right? And they're always saying, no, the problem's always on the other party. It's always them. And the other party's saying, no, I'm rational. I am healthy. I'm clear of mind, Chris, right? And they're a horrible person. Where healing can begin to start is when you can at least have common ground of saying, what if we're both a mess? What if we're both not well? When you can start with pity. And this is why Jesus says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Because you know the person that you always let off the hook, no matter how bad things got, is yourself. We are the harshest critic. We drive ourselves harder than anyone else. And Jesus says, you can wake up in the morning saying, okay, I'm going to give you another shot, Chris. What if you could extend that to your neighbor? So it starts with that. It's a supernatural act. It's God that puts something in us. And the way we can get into that is realizing my brother's not my enemy. And the second thing is, and this is, I'm going to tell you in advance, this one's not fair. Forgiveness is not fair. I want it to be an equal exchange. I wish as your pastor, I could say, hey, this is really easy. If we just do these three things, what the king does is he cancels the debt. So the billions of dollars that this guy mismanaged or like intentionally stole, billions of dollars, the king says, you don't need to pay it. But even as a transaction happens, someone has to pay, right? Let's say you have a friend over and you guys have a good time and you brought out like your nice glasses instead of like your plastic glasses. Like you're like, you pretend that you have really nice things, right? And you put it out and you're like, here it is, it's all great. And they actually knock over that expensive glass. Or they break that really nice chair that cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars. When that happens, do you walk over to the counter, get a piece of paper and start writing a bill? Right? Like, oh, thanks for coming over. By the way, it's $65. I expect payment full, right? What do you do? You say, even though it hurts, you say, I got it. We got it. We'll pay for it. Don't worry. Because that's what like a good host would do. In the same way with forgiveness, when you cancel the debt, when you say, I'm going to choose to forgive you, you're saying, you are not going to pay. Well, then who pays? Me? You ruined my reputation. You insulted my family. You hurt me financially. You might even hurt me physically. You're saying what? I have to pay that debt? See, we want them to pay. We're really good at this. The way we make other people pay is that we're cold to them. Or we go around and let everyone know, hey, just, I'm not gossiping. I just really want to let you know who they really are. You might go to their boss, you might hear they're applying for a job, and you'll call and say, hey, just you know, let you know what's going on about Billy, right? That's a way we make them pay. Like the classic Minnesota Nice way we make people pay is that we like sit back with a smile on our face, but inside our head, we're like watching them and like wishing that they would trip as they're walking. We hope that they experience like the flu, right? I hope that they're by that toilet all day long, right? And you celebrate and you see on Facebook or Twitter, or you hear that they didn't get that promotion, or their car wouldn't start in the morning, or like they ran out of hot water. Inside you're like, yeah! Right? Where that is like a high post. Someone went, woo, yeah! No. Right? What you're doing is you're making them pay. Their pain is bringing you joy. Think about that. We've all been there. That's not free. You're not experiencing freedom by that. You're still letting someone else have power over your heart, over your vacation, over your day, over like how you work, over how you celebrate. Jesus is saying, you're being tortured when you do that. So how do we pay? Man, that's hard. That's a heavy thing. Saying, okay, then I'm going to hold on to, what are you going to do? You're going to experience pain by choosing forgiveness. I'm sorry. I wish you could say, it's just easy and you just feel good all the time. No, by you saying, I'm not going to lash out. I'm not going to wish that for their demise. I'm not going to gossip or I'm not going to go on Twitter and put all these things about them. Instead, I'm going to what? I'm going to quiet down. I'm going to feel what I feel. I'm going to, like, and that pain that you experience, I don't want to discount that. That pain that you experience is valid and it's real. It's not poo-pooing it. It's not saying, well, just it doesn't really hurt. Yeah, it hurts a lot. Some of you are carrying it. It feels like it's killing you. But Jesus is saying, where you can start by saying, I'm going to cancel that debt, is that's when you go to God and say, then you better show up and give me what I need. You better come quickly, because what's going to come out of my mouth, what's going to come on the screen, what's going to come in my mind is nothing but sin. That's what it is. And if you say that you're good, you say that you're good and beautiful, then you got to come and deliver Jesus. Because that's what canceling debt means. It's being open-handed. Instead of being close-handed on chapstick or this pain or that word or that person, what you want to do is saying, I am in control of this pain and you will pay. Canceling the debt, forgiveness, what Jesus is talking about, forgiveness from the heart, is being open-handed and say, well, then you better come and deal with this, Jesus. Because when you do that, you're trusting that he is good. You're trusting he is who he says he is. And that's really hard to do this. So let me share something with you. It's not about feelings. When I talk to people about forgiveness, they're like, but it doesn't feel, I'll forgive when I feel like forgiving. Well, then you are going to be in prison a long time. And, you know, I'm a high feeler. I like talking about emotions. I like talking about feelings. And feelings are valid. And in the Bible, there's experience. We want people to experience beautiful things. But there's things that Jesus invites us into that does not care about our feelings. He says, obey. And this is one of them. He said, you have to forgive. Because if I waited just till I felt like forgiving someone, it's all dependent on what? Me, again. It's all dependent on me. Jesus is saying, what if you use your head? What if you use your head? Start with your head. Of saying, I'm going to choose to love. I'm going to choose to forgive. But I have to get that from Jesus. I'm going to go to Jesus. I'm going to say, God, you have to give me love. You have to give me forgiveness. Because I don't know about, for me, with that person that hurt us, it took us years, 7 years of doing that. You know what? After a little bit, I still didn't feel like forgiving, but I'm going to continue to choose to forgive. I'm going to choose to forgive. God, you have to come. You have to come. And it wasn't until like a couple years later, or actually I felt, hey, I'm starting to feel a little bit free. Then someone would say that person, a person's name or something would remind me of, and I'd feel the anger come up. I'm like, okay, Jesus, I need more. I need more. Your heart and your head will catch up. Your heart and your head will catch up. But you have to start by choosing, God, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to ask for you to come. And when you can do this, friends, then the idea of forgiveness is not just some churchy game. Then it doesn't just have to be the pursed lips and say, yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, I totally forgive them. It's you can see that person and you can actually feel love. You feel free they don't dictate your emotions anymore. It's in that season where we can grow as like a healthy person. That's when we can actually trust it, when Jesus says, take heart. You can pause and be confident that he'll give you that love. He'll give you what you need to get through it. So I'd like to maybe practice this. I invite you to stand, if you wouldn't mind, if you're able to. And we're going to try this whole forgiveness thing. Because the more that we can get, more we can get out from just like these great ideas, and we can actually begin to practice these things, where we can actually like maybe even model it and walk people through it and actually do it, like that's when we can experience something life-giving. So where do we start? Where we start is this, is you just acknowledge. It's what my wife calls become friends with reality, Chris, right? We talked about being being prudent in our series about being able to just pause, look around the room, like in your heart, look around the room. In the room of your heart, where is that resentment? Who's that person that when you see or you think about, it hooks your heart and brings it down? Like, what's that movie clip on the TV that just plays over and over and over again that just burns you? What's in the trophy case of other people's hurt and pain that you have celebrated? What's on the refrigerator of the things to buy of more pain and resentment on other people? So where we can start is just say, oh, okay, I see that one. And I'm going to pray. And I'm going to model it. And if that's something you feel like, I want to at least move my arrow from like the hurt and the pain, just maybe like 2 degrees towards the kingdom, start there. Because it's funny, when we just lean a little bit into Jesus, how he comes running after us. He's got something good for you. There's freedom and there's healing for you. So please, join me. Let's pray. So Holy Spirit, will you come? And I ask God, even now, you dial up where that resentment, where that bitterness, where that unforgiveness might live. And Jesus, I pray you'd help us just be able first just to see it. Give us the confidence and the wisdom to be prudent, to be able just to acknowledge it and realize, I don't want that anymore. That is not life-giving. I don't want to be like Jesus said. I don't want to be tortured. I don't want to be in prison. So I ask God, even now, you would come and put healing, you'd put hope, you'd put freedom in our lives. And that we hold that person, we hold those words, we hold that memory, we hold it even just open-handed, even now, we ask God that you would come and take it out, exchange that bitterness, that rage, that anger, that hurt, and that pain. God, I pray you take that out and you just put something beautiful in there. I trade that anger for peace. God, I trade that pain for freedom. I trade that ugliness that I feel inside for beauty. Holy Spirit, will you come? And God, will you give us yourself so that when we walk out and as we're living our life, as we're going throughout our week, as we see that person or we have that memory, what comes out of us instead of something ugly, what comes out of us is your kingdom. Will we be surprised by your beauty this week, Jesus? Will we be surprised by forgiveness? And give us the strength, Jesus, to go back to you again and again and again, that we will not give up. Trust you, God. Amen. Well, we have our ministry team. If they want to make their way up, these are people who are trained on how to stand with you, partner with you, and just ask God to do beautiful things in your life. And here's my encouragement. If you feel that, if you feel like something was highlighted or someone was highlighted, it'd be easy to just say, yeah, okay, got it. That's good. I'd encourage you, take what's one more thing you're willing to try? It might be coming up and just saying, I don't want to feel this anymore. I don't want to be dictated by that person anymore. That's what the ministry team is up here for. So if you'd like to come get prayer or for anything else, please do. We have, we're going to worship for a little bit longer. We still have donuts in the back and some coffee. And have a great rest of your Sunday. Thank you for coming to the Cloquet Vineyard.